have trillions and trillions of microbes in our body. They all have their own likes and dislikes, and this is why the variety is so important. If we're having the same plant foods day in, day out, we're only feeding a certain subset of the microbes.
Welcome to another episode of the HSE Talking Health and Wellbeing podcast. My name is Eamon Keogh. Today we are talking about gut health, what it means and why is it so important for us. With so many messages about gut health, or terms like prebiotic and probiotic appearing in adverts or on our social media feeds, how can we make sense of it all? I'm delighted to welcome Geraldine Sexton, a senior project dietitian with our HSE Healthy Eating Active Living program, to help us unpack and understand the benefits of having a healthy gut. Geraldine, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Eamon.
So we might just get straight into it, Geraldine. We're hearing a lot about gut health these days, but could you just explain what it means?
Yeah, so when we talk about our gut health, we're actually talking about the health of our digestive tract. That's this long 9-meter tube, which starts here at our entry point in our mouth and goes right down to our exit point. And when we're focusing on gut health, we're talking about that last meter and a half. So very much the large bowel as such.
Okay. And why is that important?
So there's lots of reasons why it's important. So one of the reasons would be that we're hearing a lot of health promoting messages about all the different foods that we should be eating to get all these health benefiting nutrients. But really, if we don't have a healthy digestive tract or a healthy gut lining, we're not able to extract all the nutrients from those foods. So to get the most out of the foods that we're eating, we really want to have good gut health. The second reason, and this is quite topical, is that 70% of our immune system actually lives along that 9-meter digestive tract. And what we know is that people who have good gut health have less allergies, less colds and flus, so less sick days overall. So if you want to nourish your immune system, you want to nourish your little gut microbes as well. And then the third reason, which for me is probably one of the biggest benefits, is that over the last 10 years of research, we know that having good gut health plays a really important role in prevention and management of chronic diseases, things like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, neurological conditions like Alzheimer's and dementia, and our mental health as well. So really, when you hear these health benefits, this is why we're really promoting that we work towards having a good gut health. So it's not a fad. It's really
It seems to be connected to everything, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned microbes there, but there's a lot of terms been used about gut health, like microbes and microbiomes and terms like that. Would you mind just explaining, just for the benefit of the listeners, some of those terms?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of scientific terms and they do sound very alike and people do use them interchangeably. So when we talk about microbes, or another word for it is microorganisms, we're talking about the trillions and trillions of different bacteria, fungi like the yeasts and viruses which live in our body.
Yeah.
When we talk about all these little guys, I always call them little guys, they produce a number of different chemicals. So they produce hormones, different vitamins and chemicals like short chain fatty acids. So when we talk about the microbiome, it's the microorganisms and all these chemicals. So it's that entire environment that we have. We're talking very much about the gut microbiome today, but just to say there are a number of different microbiomes in our body. We've got an oral microbiome, which is obviously in our mouth. We've got a skin one as well. And then women would have a vaginal microbiome as well.
Right. Okay. And how do we know if we have good gut health?
Okay. So there's a couple of different ways. If you are experiencing digestive symptoms, things like constipation or diarrhea, or maybe alternating between the two, if you have symptoms like bloating, that kind of, or distension, reflux even, that might indicate to you that something's not right and maybe your little microbes aren't too happy. If you're not experiencing any symptoms and you're wondering, do I have good gut health? There's a number of questions you can ask yourself. So how are you sleeping? Like, are you getting that 7 to 8 hours of restorative sleep every night? How are you managing your stress? Would stress be something that is quite strong with you, is quite overwhelming? Are you sick a lot of the time? Do you take antibiotics? Do you exercise? Are you avoiding any foods because maybe they make you feel a little bit uncomfortable? So if you're asking yourself these questions, and you're kind of going, oh, do you know what? I do take a lot of antibiotics, or I'm not a great sleeper, or I'm not managing my stress well. That might be a sign that maybe your gut microbiome isn't the happiest.
Right. Okay. And Geraldine, are there any tests or kits to help us know if we have good gut health?
So I'd like to just give that straight no, but okay. To give you a bit of context, I guess, there are an awful lot of claims. There's a number of tests out there, and that if you give them a blood sample or maybe a sample of your poop, they can tell you what your gut health looks like or your gut microbiome looks like. But the reality is the science hasn't caught up with those claims yet.
Okay.
And the reason is that when we talk about the trillions and trillions of different bacteria, fungi, and like the yeast and the viruses, we only know about a very small percentage of what's actually living in our body. There's so much more to actually discover yet. But what we do know is that some bacteria do different things in different environments, and different bacteria actually have the same function. So at this minute in time, no, there is no test. I'm not saying there won't be one in the future. But at the minute, the science just isn't there yet.
Okay. But we know enough to help manage good gut health. We just don't have a full picture of how it all works. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like this has been a very much a trending topic over the last 10 years, because this is where we've really discovered all the benefits of having a good gut health.
Yeah.
And as I said, there are a few key things that you can identify in yourself, such as the questions I just suggested earlier. And that really should be enough to tell you whether or not your gut health is in good nick.
Okay. And is there anything we can do as adults to help us manage our own gut health?
Yeah, so probably one area where the research is really, really strong is that we should be looking to increase the amount of fibre in our diet, so the dietary fibre. In Ireland, we typically have around 18 grams of fibre a day, whereas the recommendations would be saying that we should be having around 30 grams of fibre a day. Now, it's not just the fibre, it's the variety of fibres as well. So there's six different species of plant food. We've got our fruits, our vegetables, we've got our nuts and seeds. We've got our beans, peas, lentils, or legumes, and we've herbs and spices, and we have our whole grains. So really what we want to do is first check in with ourselves to see how much fibre am I actually eating in my diet on a daily basis. And then looking at the varieties and thinking, you know, am I actually eating across that six? And if I am, how many different varieties of plant food am I actually eating every week? Now, it's really important that people don't get overwhelmed when they hear this, because, you know, we have to think about where are we right now, okay? And if you are checking out with yourself and you're saying, you know, I am eating across the six, but I'm only getting 10 different varieties, because we are creatures of habit. We do tend to buy the same fruits, vegetables. You know, we do eat the same foods day in, day out. So it's just kind of counting how many varieties am I having and maybe thinking, right, she's saying get to 30, because that's where we have the most evidence where people who have 30 or more different varieties of plant food would have the most diversity. Mm. But maybe if you're having 10, say, what can I do to get to 15? And then once you've achieved that, what can I do to get to 20? So build it up gradually as what suits you and your family. It doesn't have to be too complicated. And I suppose one thing just to say is when people hear this recommendation, they're thinking 30 servings of fruit and vegetables. How am I going to do that? Mm. But it's across that spectrum. So remember, it's your fruit, your vegetables, your nuts and seeds, your beans, peas, lentils, herbs and spices and whole grains.
Yeah. The more you include, I suppose, the more robust your gut gets.
Absolutely. Like people will come to me and the first question is, what should I stop doing? What am I eating that is actually damaging my gut health? Like, what about alcohol? What about coffee? Like, are these bad things? But where we're seeing the most evidence is, okay, there might be things that don't make your gut too happy, but we really, really make them happy if we start feeding them. So think of your fiber as your fertilizer. The more of the different plant foods that you eat, the more you're nourishing those little microbes and the more diverse range you have, and therefore the healthier you will be. There is one thing just to mention. If when you do your first assessment and you think, do you know what, I don't actually eat a very high fiber diet, don't go from 0 to 100 very quickly, because you will experience digestive discomfort because those little microbes have to get time to adjust to all these fibers. So if you think, I'm not great here with the fiber, gradually build your intake up over a number of days, number of weeks. And make sure as you increase your fiber, you increase your fluid as well, because those two go quite close together.
Okay. And just to go back to plants for a minute, if you don't like plants, some people don't like the taste of them or the texture. Have you any advice?
So the first thing I'd say to somebody is, what is it about your fruits, vegetables or any of the plant foods that you don't like? It's checking in with yourself. One of the most important things we can do whenever we're trying to make a health behavior change is awareness. So why are we doing what we're doing, or why are we not doing what we are recommended to do? So is it something like an experience? Is it a memory? Is it a taste? Is it a texture? So trying to first of all figure that out and then challenging it. So if it is a case that you grew up and you got boiled broccoli or boiled cabbage or boiled carrots and it was like mush.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's why you don't like those vegetables. So what about if you roasted them in the oven? What about if you stir fry them? What about if you use different herbs and spices and seasonings just to make them taste different? Would you actually accept them a little bit more? So just doing that bit of internal assessment of yourself and a bit of experimentation. And interestingly, well, I find it interesting, there was a study done a number of years ago where people who did not eat any fruits or vegetables, they were asked to eat the high plant-based diet.
Yeah.
And after 2 weeks, they actually started to crave those foods. And we think that's because the oral microbiome actually changed.
Wow.
So the microbes that love those foods really just took over and people started eating more and more of those foods. So you definitely can change your taste preferences.
Okay. But it takes time, and don't get disheartened initially. So as you're saying, there's so much variety there. If something doesn't work, you can change it or mix and match.
Absolutely. And even like when you hear variety, it can be difficult sometimes because the foods we get are the foods that the supermarkets are buying based on demand.
Yeah.
So you might look around the supermarket and go, this is going to be hard. I'm not going to get the 30 different varieties of plant food in. So it's looking at easy little swaps. Like if you got a red, green, orange and yellow bell pepper, That's four different varieties of bell pepper. If you looked at your broccoli, you can get the long stem broccoli, you can get your regular broccoli. If you go over to the bean section, there's lots of different tins of beans. Why not just get a tin of mixed beans? Same with your nuts and seeds. Instead of buying each individual one, buy mixed varieties. So it is quite easy to get that 30 variety. It's just maybe changing your habits, changing your shopping practices and experimenting over time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Sometimes I look at a recipe because I like to cook, but then they have all these extra ingredients or herbs or more spices, and you're going, God, I have to buy 20 of these to make the curry. But a little can go a long way.
Yeah, and I think in this day and age with the cost of living crisis, like, people are a little bit worried about experimenting with these new foods, especially if they have young kids, because they have a limited budget. And they're thinking, what if I buy all these foods and my kids don't eat it? So just slowly introduce these things. This isn't a sprint. This is definitely a marathon. So slowly go at your own pace. Look and think, you know, what kind of things can I do that suit me, my lifestyle, my family? And just gradually test things, trial things and see how you go. Because no matter how you do, once you start this process, you're going to be in a better position than you are perhaps today.
Yeah. And actually, you mentioned children there. I've just gone to ask you if you had any tips for parents, you know, particularly some kids are fussy eaters or don't want to try things.
Okay, so for new parents or parents who are people who are thinking about having children, definitely starting with weaning is one of the most important times for exposing your children to different types of tastes and textures. So a lot of times when we're recommending that we start weaning at 6 months, and a lot of times we go for more of the sweeter vegetables and the sweeter fruits, but really we can go straight in with the bitter tasting ones or the kind of the earthy flavors like mushrooms. So definitely be introducing those straight away as soon as you're starting to wean. And also then just been mindful of the recommendations with reducing the use of the bottles. If you're bottle feeding your baby, trying to get the baby off the bottle by 1 year of age, because what we're seeing is that people who keep on giving their baby bottles longer than that, they do tend to have a fussier child. So lots of exposure to different taste, textures and flavors and getting them off the bottle as soon as they can. So they'd be two very important things to help with the fussiness. If you already have a child who's already fussy, I'll share a tip that I actually use with my own kids. So when we talk about gut health, I always say to my kids, let's feed your taste buds and let's feed your little minions. So what I try to describe to my kids is they have this little pet inside them. Pick something, because they're like, what, a pet? So they chose the minions because they love the minions. Yeah. So whenever they go to get food, I say, okay, you're feeding you, you're feeding your taste buds. What about your little pet or your little minions? So you'd see them coming with maybe a ham and cheese toasted sandwich, and then it's like, what about your minions? And they might go, okay, give me the nuts, or I'll have some fruit, or you know, maybe I'll put some salad on the side. They actually do eat salad. And this has worked really, really well, because it's them understanding at such an early age of the health benefits. But also, I'm not saying to them, you can't have this, you can't have that. It's very much, let's feed your taste buds, let's feed your minions.
Yeah, and you're putting it in the context that they understand it.
I don't know if you remember the Beano or Dandy comics. Remember the numbskulls?
I do.
Yeah, so I describe it like that. So I say, these minions live in your body and they all have really important jobs. Some of them make you happy.
Very good.
What my daughter actually compared it to, that movie Inside Out on Disney.
Yeah.
It really does work, because particularly with getting the variety, and because they've always been quite good with fruit and vegetables, but getting them to eat nuts and seeds or even the legumes, that's one that in Ireland we don't tend to do quite well with. And they have got more creative and they have got more accepting of experimenting with different foods, just with this concept, because it makes it more fun and it's at their level as well that they understand.
Yeah. And actually, I was talking to Marion McBride before just about healthy lunchboxes for kids, and she was talking about just changing it and the variation of diet and not to panic if something doesn't work.
Absolutely.
Or if something works 1 week, mightn't work the next.
Yeah, absolutely. Giving them exposure to a certain food 10, 15 times before they'll accept it. We keep on hearing about like positive reinforcement, but sometimes it's actually a good idea not to make an issue that they've suddenly accepted a food, because you might just remind them, you didn't like that food. Well done.
Oh,
and they're like,
oh,
sugar, I don't like that food, and stop again. So variety, making the plate look nice and colourful, again, experimenting with different textures as well is really important. When you talk about variety as well, just to make the point, is that, as I said, we've trillions and trillions of different microbes in our body. They all have their own likes and dislikes. And this is why the variety is so important. If we're having the same plant foods day in, day out, we're only feeding a certain subset of the microbes. So then the other guys aren't thriving and therefore potentially missing out on their health benefits. So what we see is people who have a predominantly plant-based diet, now not going vegan, not going vegetarian. So that's actually been researched. Researchers have looked and said, you know, if you're vegan, if you're vegetarian, does that give you better gut health than someone who's an omnivore?
Yeah.
And the answer is no.
Right.
It's this, that we have a high plant-based diet, lots of different varieties, And then including even like having your things like your oily fish, your olive oil, like the microbes love those as well. But that is the reason why we talk about variety. It's because all of the little guys, they have their own likes and dislikes. And if we only feed a little percentage of them, those guys will thrive, but the other guys won't. And we're missing out on that huge benefit.
Actually, that's interesting what you said about going vegan, because there's so much advertising around vegan being a healthier option now. I understand it's a lifestyle choice in some cases, or you know, people have beliefs about different things, but I just wanted to focus on that healthier piece that sometimes you see on, you know, the alternative sausages or alternative burgers.
Yeah, and those foods actually aren't necessarily the healthier, perhaps if you made them at home when you've got complete control about the ingredients and what's going in there. But when we are looking at, say, the processed burgers and, you know, bean burgers and sausages and stuff, oftentimes they're very high in saturated fat, they're very high in salt and sugar. And oftentimes they've been processed so much that lots of the health benefiting nutrients are lost. Things like polyphenols, which are plant chemicals, you know, these are something that the vitamin and mineral industry haven't yet managed to capture and put them into a little supplement yet.
Yeah.
So sometimes we lose that health benefit by going for those ultra processed foods. So if we are looking to use those foods, it's thinking, maybe I could make that at home. But again, you don't have to go down that route. Absolutely, having a just very balanced diet, that's where you're going to get the benefits from.
And just sticking with that advertising theme, I've seen a lot of recommendations advertising probiotics as a benefit. Do we actually need to be taking probiotics for a healthy gut?
Okay, so this space is really, really confusing. Okay, so some days we're hearing the media saying there's huge benefits in taking probiotics. And then other days we're hearing people say there's absolutely no health benefits to taking probiotics. We're kind of sitting somewhere in the middle. So there are some clinical conditions where there is a health benefit to taking a probiotic. When someone takes an antibiotic, for example, there are certain strains of bacteria which have been identified that if you take them in a certain number, something like 500 billion for a period of time, so it's usually during the course of the antibiotic and then for 10 days after, that you actually get a health benefit. Okay, you'd see that as well for things like colds and flus, and for some people if they struggle with constipation. Okay, but there's an awful lot of claims as well, like things like we should be taking it for general health reasons, or if you had acne or perhaps Parkinson's and things like that. But the reality is, when it comes to probiotics, you need to think, like, why am I actually taking this? And is there evidence behind it? So with those other conditions at this minute in time, there has been no strain identified to treat something like acne. Now, it might be that there's no strain ever will be identified, or actually that probiotics will never do anything for something like acne. We just don't know that yet. So we have to be very particular. So if you're thinking, I want to take a probiotic, think, why am I looking to treat it? Or what am I looking to treat? Is there evidence behind it? What is the dose? And then finding the probiotic to actually match what you're looking for.
And where can you find probiotics?
So when you're looking for a probiotic, you are actually looking for something in a capsule in the pharmacy, or, you know, in your maybe your health food shop. We can get some live cultures as well in fermented foods, because gut health is such a trending topic right now and the term probiotic is used interchangeably.
Yeah.
So sometimes we're led to believe that if we buy sauerkraut, kimchi, pickled foods, all that sort of stuff, that we're getting probiotics. But we're not. To be a probiotic, you have to have proven that there's a health benefit and what the strain is that gives that health benefit and what the actual dose is. So these other foods, the fermented foods, they contain live cultures. And there's absolutely a lot of evidence to say that these foods give us health benefits. They're not something we typically eat in the Irish diet. They do add variety and interest to food. You can get lots of different flavours and textures that we wouldn't be very familiar with. But back in 2022, I think it was, in Stanford, they produced a really, really good article that showed that if we're having up to 4 servings of fermented food every day, we can reduce inflammation, which has been linked to chronic disease. But also that people who do that would have a nice diverse range of microbes in their body. Now, 4 servings is a lot, especially when I say in the Irish diet, it's not something that we would typically eat. So consistency is key. So rather than having, say, one day a week where you eat 4 servings maybe on your plate, if you can have 1 or 2 servings every single day, you will get a health benefit there. It's not a probiotic, but you definitely will get a health benefit. So something like your live cultured yogurts, your kefir, like I said, your sauerkraut, your kimchi, different things like that.
Yeah.
Now, be mindful as well. I often get asked, is sourdough, does that contain live cultures? Because that's a fermented food.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, it's the starter culture. Once you put it in the oven and cook it, you've killed off all the microbes. Any fermented food that you're going to eat for the microbes, you want to make sure that they're still alive.
Okay.
To get the health benefit.
Yeah. Oh, very good. As I mentioned at the start, this is a very popular topic. And it's all over social media at the moment, even my own feed. I can't look at my Instagram or whatever social channel it is and something doesn't pop up about gut health. But is there anything that concerns you at the moment that's been pushed?
Absolutely. First of all, to say like social media can have a good place. I think a lot of younger people now are becoming a lot more health conscious because of what we're seeing on social media. But with that comes misinformation. The thing I see often is people will come into my clinic and they've already limited an awful lot of foods in their diet because they've bought into these tests that have been promoted. So it's sort of give us a blood sample, give us a hair sample, give us a poop sample, and we will tell you about all the foods that you're intolerant to. You're intolerant to gluten, you're intolerant to dairy, you're intolerant to eggs. Yeah. They always come out in the list. And I've seen it firsthand where I've had patients come to me and their digestive symptoms have actually got way worse. And the reason is because these tests are advising that they remove foods that are actually gut friendly foods, you know. Right. And the thing is, even the top immunologists in the world would say that these tests are completely invalid. And that is really, really concerning because, as I said, a lot of people are excluding these foods. And I definitely see it with gluten. That is something that is completely vilified and unnecessarily. Only 1% of the population have celiac disease, and up to 7-8% of people have been officially diagnosed with non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Yet 30% of the population believe that they are intolerant to gluten. Plus then there's also the other health claims that gluten is bad for everybody, whether or not you have symptoms or not. And the problem is that when you take gluten out of your diet, so gluten is a protein, when you take foods that contain gluten out of your diet, you're taking out oats, you're taking out barley, you're taking out rye, you're taking out wheat. Those foods contain fibers which feed a number of the little microbes in our gut. So if you take those food out unnecessarily, you're not feeding that subset of microbes, which is going to be problematic from trying to build this big diverse family or community of microbes. But then the other thing is that we have evidence to say that people who have high fiber diets, we know, have a lower risk of colorectal cancer. And there was a really interesting study that showed that you can reduce your risk of colorectal cancer by 19% by having a high fiber diet. Okay.
Yeah.
The researchers went back to look at, well, what type of fibers is this? Mm. And they discovered it's the fibers that come from whole grains. So if you're avoiding a food that you don't actually need to avoid, not only are you missing out on optimizing the diversity of your gut microbes, but you're also immediately removing that protection for developing colorectal cancer. And 19% is a huge percentage. So we really need to be mindful about these things, these tests, and, you know, asking ourselves, is there any evidence behind what I'm reading here? Do I really need to go down that route?
Okay. And where should people go for information then? Or who should they talk to when they want to discuss this more? Because particularly around the whole gluten piece.
Yeah, dietitians, this is our bread and butter. This is what we're trained to do. We're evidence-based, so nothing we would recommend is just, you know, off the cuff. We have to follow strict guidelines and we do research these areas. So if you can work with a dietitian who specializes in gut health, they would support you through this. Now, there are certain things you can do yourself at home. So if you believe that you're intolerant to a certain food, what I would recommend is you make a list of your symptoms. And I love my scales a 0 to 10. So I would say make a list of your symptoms and then scale it on a 0 to 10 scale. Where do I believe I am right now? Or where do I feel I am right now? Then eliminate that food group on its own, just the one, for a period of 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
After that period of time, go back to your baseline assessment and say, right, where am I right now? If you've noticed, Jeannie Mac, there has been a great improvement in my symptoms, there's definitely something wrong here. You can't just then say, that's it, I'm taking that food group out. You need to reintroduce that food because that could have just been a coincidence. You could have been less stressed that week. Maybe you did it when you're on holidays or something like that.
Yeah.
So you reintroduce that food and then you again, for 2 to 3 weeks, you check in and see, did your symptoms reappear? Now, if they have reappeared, you can kind of say, okay, there's something here that maybe isn't really working out for me. But that doesn't mean that that food has to be eliminated from your diet forever. Maybe there's a certain percentage that you can tolerate. Maybe there's a situation right now that means you can't tolerate it. So during COVID, my referrals for IBS symptoms shot up. And when we got down to the root cause, it was the stresses. So when we're stressed, our gut and our brain are very, very tightly connected.
Yeah.
So when we're stressed, we can sometimes become a little bit less tolerant to foods. So, you know, manage your stress and suddenly these foods aren't an issue. So if you do this and you come up with a list of foods that you're thinking, do you know what? I've done that sort of assess, remove, reintroduce, and I've come up with this list. I definitely would work with a dietitian at that point. Even if you didn't want to up to now, work with a dietitian to help you establish what level of this can I tolerate or what can I do to bring this food back in? Because yeah. Any of these fibrous plant foods that you're eliminating from your diet, that's a food source from certain microbes. So you don't want to take them out altogether if you don't have to.
Okay. And I suppose doing that baseline piece first
is key.
Yeah. And also then you're going to your dietitian with something to be able to talk about it as opposed to not being able to describe
exactly
what you're eating or how you're feeling.
Yeah. And I definitely, if you're doing that baseline assessment, I'd say to you as well, ask yourself, how's my sleep? Am I stressed? Have I recently been on antibiotics? Am I exercising? those questions come in, they're very important as well, because if you're doing this assessment and you're really, really stressed and you're not sleeping well, you could get false results. So just even kind of scoring that along, it just gives you a bigger picture of what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. And Geraldine, can I ask you, how long are you working in this area?
I'll give you my age. I'm 20 years right, in this okay. area.
No, because I had a follow-on question. I was just going to ask you, because I found this very, very interesting. But what have you found the most interesting when you're talking about gut health or in your years of working in the practice?
For me, it's the gut-brain connection, and specifically the link between our gut health and our mental health. Okay. Right. Not to get too scientific, but I'm going to just tell you about a really interesting study. It was a groundbreaking study. It was called the SMILE trial.
Yeah.
So we've always known that when we eat a varied, balanced diet, you know, we're getting a lot of vitamins and minerals that are important for our mood. But in this particular study, they got two groups of people that were diagnosed with moderate to severe depression. They split them into two groups. Group A were given a very plant-based diet, pretty much like the Mediterranean diet. And group B were then given this befriending counselling. So these groups were followed over a period of 12 weeks. At the end of the study, the group who were on the diet, 32% of them were no longer considered having clinical depression. Whereas with the befriending counselling group, only 8% were considered no longer to have clinical depression. And that's significant. That's huge. Now, in this study, both groups were still on their antidepressant medication. So if anyone has, you know, depression or anxiety, don't think I'm just going to come off my medication and look at diet. But it's definitely worth having a conversation with your doctor to say, I've come across this. I've heard about the link about how gut health and eating pretty much the Mediterranean style diet can improve someone's mental health. Is this something that we could look at to perhaps eventually come off my medication, reduce my medication? Or for some, I had one patient who, you know, he was really struggling with the medication. It wasn't doing what he wanted to do. The doctors were thinking about increasing the dose. He had heard of this. He came to work with me and he was like, you know, do you think you could do something?
Yeah.
And he didn't need to go on more medication. And eventually he came off all his medication and he's managing his depression through diet and lifestyle only. And I just think that's fascinating. And I think it's really empowering that, you know, sometimes we feel that we've no control over these things. But what we're learning is we very much have control over these things. And I just think that's amazing.
Yeah. I suppose just to say, though, it would be important to talk to your healthcare professional before doing anything like that.
Oh, absolutely. Or, yeah. Don't do this alone. But for me, and not just for me, that paper was so important that for people working in the space, it got them to really think that when they're developing their care plans to support their patients, they're now thinking, you know, there is something in this gut health thing and this should be now part of the overall care plan. It's not just about medication or counseling. It's like, what can we do to support this person to, you know, eat this more gut friendly diet?
Yeah. And for healthcare professionals as well, would you have any message for them?
Just that when you are developing your care plan, so if you have somebody who's got cardiovascular disease, maybe they're pre-diabetic, we often come with, here's a list of things that you need to stop doing because it's causing your high cholesterol, or it's, you know, it's making it more difficult for you to manage your blood sugars. So instead of going down that route, isn't it nice for someone to hear, you know, you are at risk of these conditions. There's a lot of stuff you can do. And it's all about what we can add into your diet, add into your lifestyle, and then supporting them. This isn't all or nothing. This isn't, here you are today, we need you to get to this point and you need to get there by next week. It's saying, these are the things that you need to do. Now let's work with you to start building these into your diet, because sustainability is key here. This isn't, you do this for 6 weeks and then you go back to your old habits. This is a gradual lifestyle change. But it's just having that confidence and looking at the research that this is so, so strong. And every day, every year, we're getting more and more robust research to say that our gut health is essentially the blueprint for overall health. And we should be looking at it whenever we're looking at different treatment options for our patients.
Very good. And can I ask you about what you see as the biggest barriers for people to have good gut health?
I think it's that all or nothing mentality. Yeah. I think we're programmed to immediately go to the negative. So when people hear information like this, they immediately go, I'm doing everything wrong. I have to start again. This is going to be too big for me, too overwhelming. And I think, first of all, I'd say to people, just stop and think about all the things that you are doing. So look at how much, you know, like how much fruit and vegetables are you eating in your day? Do you eat nuts and seeds? Do you eat, you know, like I said, do you eat across the spectrum of six? You're definitely doing something. So just figuring out where you are to start with. But also remembering when it comes to good gut health, it's not just about diet. Our sleep is really important. So are we someone who sleeps very well? If you are, there's tick. That's one box done that you're okay. Are you someone who tries to manage your stress as best as you can? So even something as small as 5 minutes of deep breathing or doing a bit of yoga, getting out and doing a little bit of meditation, mindfulness, like that has been shown to improve diversity of your gut microbes. Exercise is important. It's actually a two-way system. So people who exercise well have good gut health, but equally having good gut health can improve your capabilities when you're exercising as well. So, you know, ask yourself, do I actually get out for that 20-minute walk every day or 30-minute walk every day? Am I someone who is sick a lot of the time? So it's asking yourself all of these questions and you're probably doing a lot better than you think. So don't just immediately go, oh no, I have so much to change, you know?
Yeah.
And the key thing to remember as well, our little gut is quite resilient. So if something happens and you don't necessarily do all the different things that we're recommending you do for a couple of days, your gut isn't going to just implode. Do you know?
Yeah.
It's just pick yourself up and go, okay, I'm struggling a little bit right now. That's okay. I'll start again tomorrow. But take it slowly. Don't do anything that's too overwhelming. Think about your situation right now. What's manageable for you right now? Is it focusing on sleep? Is it focusing on diet? Like, what would work for you right now? Build that into your life. If this takes you 6 years, so what? You'll get there eventually. It's sustainable life change is what you want to hear.
Yeah, for a longer term benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very good. The thing that strikes me, just as you said, that connection between gut health and mental health. I know myself, if you're hungry or a bit grumpy or I have an awful sweet tooth, but you satisfy a short-term need or a hit and then you feel worse after.
Yeah. But even today, now coming into this, I was nervous, but I felt it in my stomach. I had the butterflies, you know? So there is that tight connection. We have all these little neurons in our brain. And when we're stressed, it's like they're strangling our gut.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Very good. Geraldine, thanks for simplifying all this for us, but we're coming to the end of the episode. But before we finish, actually, there was one other question I just wanted to ask, and it's something you mentioned earlier about how important it is to chew our food well.
Oh, yeah. So I would have a load of people come to me and their symptoms are pretty much bloating and that feeling of fullness. And when I would say to them a very simple thing of, do you chew your food well? They look at me and they're like, it couldn't be that simple. So what I do is I send them away and I say, right, look, next time you're having a meal, just for the first 3 or 4 bites, just count how many times you're chewing that food and then try and add in 3 or 4 more bites. And eventually you'll create this new habit. And the reason why, again, to give you an example of another study, there was this other study where they gave the participants almonds. They said to group one, chew it 10 times, group two, chew it 20 times, and group three, chew it 40 times. So then they collected the poop samples of all the participants. And the people who only chewed the nuts 10 times, they had the biggest amount of malabsorption. So again, we're hearing these health messages of we need to eat all of these different plant foods. We need to eat all these healthful foods. And not only do we need that healthy gut lining to get the most out of the nutrients, we also need to be chewing the food well so that we can actually release those nutrients. The guys who had chewed their food 40 times, they actually got the most nutrition from that food.
Wow.
Now, sometimes when you try and do it, you might be going, right, I'm going to chew this 40 times. And then at 15 chews, you're going, there's nothing left in my mouth. What am I going to do?
Mm.
That's absolutely fine. But just be kind of mindful. We are in a very fast world.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but oftentimes I would grab my lunch, bring it back to the desk and inhale it. So it's just stopping, taking a few moments, allowing that kind of even rest and digest. You know, we should be taking breaks so that we can enjoy our food and get the flavors, full benefits of it.
Mm.
But just, as I said, for the first couple of mouthfuls, chew your food well, count how many chews you're doing, add in 3 or 4. And then every few weeks, just add on and add on. And eventually this new habit will stick.
And actually, such an important message for children as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I'm just thinking sometimes you're saying hurry up, but actually
slow
and steady sometimes as
well. Just keep remembering to get the most out of my food, I need to chew as well.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Geraldine. I'd like to thank Geraldine Sexton for joining me today to talk about this fascinating topic, I have to say. To all our listeners, thank you for your continued support and please share on this episode. This has been HSE Talking Health and Wellbeing. Thank you for listening.